Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your host of The Creative Alchemist, and we come to you live every Thursday, and we talk about something that makes the world go round, and that's business. And every week, we come to you, and we have a guest who has some stellar expertise in their craft, in their universe that they run, and tonight will be no different. And I am the co-host, and I never take this journey alone. And before we introduce our wonderful guest, I'd like to introduce my co-host, Lori. Let them know you're here.
Hi, everyone. Lori Miller, LGC Interior Design. Happy to be here yet another week, even on a happy snow day. And tonight's guest is super special. It's Mark Lawrence, and he's going to tell us about titles and why you need one and what it is and even such a thing as title insurance. So, Mark, please introduce yourself and tell the world a little bit about who you are, what you do, and what a title is.
Sure. Thanks, Lori, and thanks, Ted, for having me. I'm honored to be on your podcast and to be speaking about title insurance this evening. And I think a real skill I'll have to bring to the table is really to keep this interesting and exciting. Once you say insurance, sometimes people's eyes can close up. So as Ted and I were talking about yesterday, if I can make this entertaining and you take something away from it, learning a little bit about what title insurance is, then I will have accomplished my goal this evening,
Hey, Mark, you know, we've been hit. You're in the Northeast. We're all, you know, in the New York metro area, and we've seen snow that we haven't seen this way in decades. Like, how does that have any effect on closings or title insurance? And I know you said, and you're going to tell people who you are and what you do, but I'm just curious, mm-hmm. With all the snow, we shut down a couple of weeks ago, and mm-hmm. can you do title searches? I mean, what happens with your industry in all this snow?
Well, that's a great question, Ted, because, since March of last year when we first started with COVID, I'll tell you that we have been it's been challenging just to close deals, to go to offices and to get to the closing table and to transact real estate transactions. I don't think I've ever seen this level of challenges, and challenges that have been, primarily, met and accomplished. A lot of it has been through technology, through people being willing to meet in different places and different ways and get together and still buy real estate and sell real estate. Snow definitely, affects, because a lot of our work is done, and I'll get into more of that shortly, is done, through going to the county clerk's offices and municipalities. And on days like this, in addition to obviously days, the past year with the challenges of COVID-19, you have offices closed, people can't get to work. And, that definitely can slow up your real estate transaction. And in addition, it can make it difficult for parties to get together if there's a closing. But I have to say that one of the great things that have come out of this whole episode and even the snow, that we've had recently, has been people's kind of reliance or people's getting more comfortable with technology and the use of technology, really to kind of carry us through and get deals closed. One of the things actually when COVID happened, they signed a bill that the government did called or that permitted RON, or remote online notarization. So traditionally documents were always executed and signed with a notary in person, provided actually that a notary can actually watch you sign something, can see your ID now through Zoom or other video conferencing platforms. Documents can be signed either through DocuSign or, electronically. And some of these, technology's been around, but what we found during COVID was that, people said, they were forced to start to use them and to see that it wasn't so hard and there wasn't such resistance. And definitely some of that is age driven. I'll say younger people are always more, and I hate the fact that I'm saying younger people. Does that mean I'm an older person? But I'm 50. But you know, the people, the younger generation, which has grown up, the 35 and unders, the millennials, the Gen Z after that, you know, they've grown up with a phone in their hands and with, you know, and have a level of comfort. You know, they've always had a laptop. I'm 50. When I started working as a lawyer, and I'm going to get into my background in a second, I didn't have an email address. My daughter laughs at me now and said, "What do you mean you didn't have an email address? I didn't even have the internet. I don't think I had a computer on my desk when I started working."
Right.
Yes, and that was not in the ice age because I'm not that old. But
who are you and what do you do? Tell us about what it is that has, how technology has impacted, what is it? So who are you and what do you do?
Mm-hmm. So a little background. So I'm Mark Lawrence. I'm one of the principals of a title insurance agency called Worldwide Land Transfer. The company's been around since 2005, and I say we're a title insurance agency. There's a distinction between being a title insurance agent and being a title insurance company. So we're not actually an insurance company in that we don't directly issue policies. We're kind of a middleman. We work with the largest four or five title insurance underwriters. They're Fortune 500 companies like First American, Fidelity, Stewart Title was someone that Ted and I spoke about yesterday, Old Republic. These are very large national companies, Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 companies. So as an agent, we have basically policy issuing authority. We do all the work and we can sign off. We can collect money on behalf of these insurance companies. And we issue these policies, these title insurance policies. And I'll get a little bit into what exactly title insurance is. So Worldwide Land Transfer has been around since 2005. I'm one of three principals of the company. We refer to ourselves as a national title insurance agent. And that's also a lot of title insurance agents are smaller companies. Mom and pop companies. We are about 100 people now. Originally, the company started in Pennsylvania outside of Philly and has spread across the Northeast and now into the Southeast and across the country. We have offices, and I work out of our Manhattan office on 34th and 6th Avenue. We have offices outside of Philly, as I mentioned, in Jersey, Florida. So we handle real estate transactions in pretty much any state in the country. So there's a lot of nuances state by state, which makes it interesting and challenging. And when I say title insurance, what exactly is title insurance? It is insurance, like we said, which doesn't make it important. And title insurance is different than your – it's not property and casualty, you know, like if a tree falls on your house or if somebody falls on your property and they sue you. That is your property and casualty insurance or your homeowner's insurance. Title insurance basically ensures that you are buying what you think you are buying. It's kind of due diligence, or I refer to it as backwards insurance, because it's not based upon something that could happen when you own the property. It's based upon – the records of, you know, the property prior to you either buying it or refinancing your mortgage on it. It's a one-time premium payment. So like any other insurance policy, you're buying a policy, except for that we don't renew every year. When you go to the closing, usually, you know, you write a bunch of checks at a closing. If you've ever had the pleasure of buying, being a homeowner or buying real estate, you go to a closing or a settlement, which is where basically the end point of the transaction where the keys are passed to the buyer of the property. You sign a lot of documents, you sign a deed, you sign mortgages, and you write a lot of checks. So one of the checks, like to say the 10th or 11th check, or by that time your hand is hurting, is a check to us for your title insurance policy premium. And that premium covers you for as long as you – yeah.
I was going to say, you hope you don't have someone like me in the closing who wants to read all the documents, right?
So we talked about that yesterday. So, if you read all the documents, that's going to be a very long closing. Fortunately, our closers are not there, and we send somebody to the closing. It's part of our function. They're not billing you hourly. Sometimes your attorney might be. So you got to be careful of that. But, you know, it's good to ask a lot of questions at a closing because there's a lot of papers that change hands. And, you know, and listen, in New York, where we're based or where I'm based personally, you oftentimes when you're buying real estate, you have an attorney who represents you and they, you know, kind of are the ones advising you. It's safe to sign this paper. It's safe to sign that. I know what is in this, but in other states, you know, as Ted was saying, you know, you might be at a closing with your real estate agent or realtor. And, you know, you don't necessarily have somebody protecting your interest or reading those documents. And, you know, it's not a bad idea to know what you're signing.
Right. Well, let me ask you, when it comes to title insurance, just so people understand, what happens if you skip that step? If you, let's say someone says, hey, you know, I'm just buying a house. I'm not worried about title insurance. What is the insurance you're missing and what are the liabilities if you go forward without it?
Mm-hmm. So as I was saying, our function as a title insurance agent is to search the property record. So if you're buying a property from, you know, from someone who's selling it and say you're D, you want to make sure you're buying from C and C bought it from B and B bought it from A. So we look at the chain of title. We look if there's currently any mortgages, liens, encumbrances on the property, the things that could affect, when you buy it, your ownership of it. Generally in New York, as I was saying, you know, where attorneys generally represent parties in real estate transactions, any attorney that you work with is going to advise you to purchase title insurance. Now, the cost of the title insurance, it is a regulated product, so that's a very important part of the title insurance industry is that whoever you buy your title insurance from, you're going to pay the same amount from whoever you buy it from. It's not regulated by the government, but there is a ratings bureau that sets the rates, and if you buy it from me or any of my competitors, you are going to pay the same for the title insurance policy. Some of the other search charges might vary, but the risk you could run – to your original question, Ted, if you don't buy it, is, you know, say someone fraudulently sold you the property. They didn't have the right to sell it to you. And, you know, and you find out, you get a letter or somebody comes to your door and says, hey, listen, what are you doing here? You don't own this home. What are you going to do? You're going to have to go to court and sue and try to get your money back. So title insurance provides, you know, if there is a claim with respect to ownership, or if you bought the property and say somebody built the deck on it, never got paid and filed what would be called a mechanics lien against the property. In other words, ensuring them the right to get paid for work that they did and say the prior owner didn't pay them. And now you bought the property. If, you know, you would now be responsible for paying that person who built the deck, because the prior owner didn't, or you didn't pick that up, we would pick that up in a title search, and that would be dealt with prior to you buying it. So these are kind of examples of some of the risk that you may incur from not buying title insurance. And with respect to the cost is based on the purchase price and the mortgage amount of the property.
So it, listening to you speak, I mean, it's kind of a corny joke, but when I was younger, people would always say, hey, I have a bridge I want to sell. Do you want to buy the Brooklyn Bridge?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just keep selling the bridge or a house over and over and without there being some clear lines of ownership, whether it's a lien or whether the house was actually sold or mm-hmm. bought and purchased, you know, whether these transactions happened or the liabilities were handled.
Well, yeah, and definitely fraud. You know, I mean, I can tell you, especially since the advent of the internet and the amount of fraud, and especially bank fraud that's out there. We've seen lawyer clients of ours you know, get emails and telling to wire money places. So fraud is one thing that, you know, that we're kind of protecting you against. In addition to, you know, property records, a lot of it, you know, in the old days, a lot of it was done by hand. So now everything is pretty much digitized, and a lot of it is on the computer. But even on the computer, you know, there could be inaccuracies in terms of data entry. So we're there to kind of protect against, you know, some of the, you know, either fraud or inaccuracy in the property records. You know, how often, you know, another question we get is how often are there claims, or do people actually make claims against title insurance? It's actually one of the least claimed upon insurance products out there, partially because I think we do our industry and certainly our company, I think we do a good job in, you know, in inspecting the records and getting everything, bringing out all the issues before you buy a property, but also, you know, so it's less than 5% and probably closer to maybe 3% of policies get claims on them. But if they do get a claim, listen, if you bought a house and you spent $1 million or $500,000 and you found out that you bought it from some, you know, person who defrauded you, you could be out $500,000. In addition to the bank, you know, if you have a mortgage, if you take a mortgage on the property, the bank is going to insist that you buy title insurance as well. So there's definitely a place in the market for, you know, this product and a need. How often do you actually have to use it? Fortunately, not often, few and far between. But when you do, you know, we cover the cost of legal defense. So we'll pay for the lawyers if somebody sues you and, you know, because you didn't own the property or you didn't, uncover a judgment or lien against the property. So we'll pay for that legal defense, and we will and ultimately pay for, you know, the money that you laid out in the event that, you know, it was proven that, you know, there was something that we should have picked up or something inaccurate in the property records.
Well, interesting. So let's, you know, and I'm going to assume it probably has happened at some point where you have an estate and you have someone's the executor of the estate and they are the beneficiary, and maybe there's another sibling, some sibling rivalry who doesn't have any stake on the property or any claim, you know, stake they can claim. And if they fraudulently create a title to the property and sell it and you guys don't catch it, then you have to cover what that person laid out if they had title insurance, correct? Am I asking the question correctly?
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly why people buy title insurance, to cover something like that. As Ted and I were speaking about yesterday, you know, generally claims on title insurance and issues, the red flag issues of title insurance, often come up through estates, you know, when somebody passes away and then their estate is going to transfer the property. Oftentimes that's a place where we have to look very carefully about the issues. Matrimonial, when marriages dissolve and the husband and wife, or husband, the partners, the spouses separate, there's oftentimes a division of the property, and that's also oftentimes you have to, you know, abide by what the court set out with respect to the division of the property and who could sell it and who has the right to the proceeds. That's a red flag issue. Taxation issues. There's tax liens, be it from the IRS or from the state. That's always a red flag issue. Another place where we see issues is surveys. So when you buy property, there is actually, you know, a physical, you know, lot that, you know, that you are buying, and that often gets mapped out. We hire surveyors to, you know, make sure that there's not a fence, over your property line. Your neighbor's fence is not over it. But back to what you were saying with respect to the state, I was telling Ted yesterday that something recent I was working on regarding type of issues that we see in title insurance was we're dealing with transfer of the state-owned property to an investor. And one of the issues that the estate is dealing with and their attorney's dealing with is that the person who died, his son lived in the house with him, and the son had a car, and the car, you know, he was a little lax and he got parking tickets, which led, and he didn't pay them, and they became judgments, and Suffolk County is owed probably around $700 in judgments, and that actually gets indexed against the property record. So if somebody has a judgment, even if it's not related to the property, but it's against an individual who owns or lives in the property, they can actually put a lien or a judgment against the property, and Suffolk County did that in this particular instance. But the problem was that the executor of the state was one son. The other son, the one who got the parking tickets, the two of them don't speak, and nobody knows what the license plate of the car was, and we're having a difficult time actually trying to get Suffolk County to identify exactly, you know, the amount of judgment, because we don't have the car's plates and the brothers don't talk. So, you know, like I was saying to Ted yesterday, there's a lot of human element that goes into the transaction and property. And, you know, people's and family problems, you know, can drag into these things and can become impediments to, you know, somebody ready, willing, our investors ready, willing, can't wait to start, you know, buy this house and start doing renovations to flip it. But he can't, you know, buy it because these brothers don't talk. We can't find out what the license plate on this car was, and we can't, you know, and pay off Suffolk County the exact amount of what they're owed. So crazy things like that come up in title insurance. It's a lot of legwork and following up with different agencies and offices as to, you know, who owes what to who. And, you know, and that's how, you know, our team spends a lot of their day, is just moving these transactions, identifying issues, trying to resolve them so that, you know, at the end of the day, a buyer can sell their property to, or a seller can sell their property to a buyer.
Almost, you guys are almost like private investigators in some regards. It's not just, what is it, the Hall of Records you go to? Well, in the past, before technology stepped in, you would literally go down and look at the records of real estate and who owned it and who sold it over time. Like, you guys can go back decades, you know, through several sellers, but it's not just that paperwork, is it?
Yeah. You know, the amazing thing about real estate is that, you know, going back to when, you know, you can go back to when this was a territory occupied by the Indians, and then, you know, people from, you know, overseas came here and settled, you know, the land, and, you know, the land got divided and, you know, and owned by people. So, you know, I've never had to go back that far, fortunately, in any of our searches, but a lot of times, you know, we search back to 40 years or the last deed of record, and the last deed of record, you know, somebody from the 1800s could, you know, or their family, the property could still be in their family name. So we're looking sometimes, you know, in, you know, dusty old books in, you know, these municipalities or, you know, county clerk's offices, at, you know, at documents that you could barely read because they're not barely legible now, you know, and about things sometimes that are not relevant. So, a lot of those records have been digitized now, and you know, so they are on, you know, you can access them on the computers. But, you know, as you know, towns and villages and the government is never too quick, you know, with respect to any being up on the first on the technology. So we've been waiting for some counties still to go online. We record actually a lot of our documents. If we get a deed and a mortgage at a closing, our job is to actually – is to record those documents with the county offices, and right now, and we do most of that now by e-file. So, the definitely technology is playing a major part in you know, in where this business of title insurance is going. You know, eventually to blockchain technology, which is how you know, some of the cryptocurrency is built on. But blockchain will at some point in time probably affect, you know, how we do our business. Some people said that that might lead to a, you know, a lack of need or elimination of our industry because the computer records are going to be so perfect and we're not going to have a need for title insurance. And we do think, you know, my colleagues and I think that maybe the percentage of fraud, you know, although, you know, could go down because of, you know, blockchain and some of that technology. But still, people are going to need us, you know, to get them through the process. As you could see, you know, the process of buying real estate, it's complicated. And you need people who understand that process to walk you through it.
Well, and the brothers who won't speak and the tickets on the car, that you can't do that through technology.
No, you're right. You know, you can go on the, we've gone onto the computer to try to search some of this stuff, but, you know, we without having a license plate. You're right. To deal with human element in any business, and especially, you know, in a, you know, this might be a business about, say, which is a physical asset. But I always say real estate is still a business about people and, you know, and dealing with people and you know, getting people to come, you know, to the table to sell something. And that's the real estate from one person to another.
Right. Well, so you're also, you're saying two things. So you started off saying you do title insurance, right? So do you guys issue the policy or is it like Stewart Title? Are they actually the holders of the policy in the insurer?
Yeah, so as I mentioned at the front, so or at the beginning of our broadcast, that we are a title insurance agency. So we are actually not an insurance company. So state has to you know, authorize you to be an insurance company. We don't actually issue the policies, as you were saying. We issue the policies of the title insurance companies like a Stewart Title or a First American,
okay,
Fidelity. But we do all of the legwork as a company, and we have authority to essentially issue these policies on behalf of the insurance company and to collect the money associated with what the cost of the policy is. The only real place where we have to get their approval is what we call high liability files. And depending on the company, you know, for us, any file that's over $5 million in the property cost or value, we have to get them to look at the papers and sign off because there's a little more high risk with respect to, you know, these more expensive properties. So, but generally those policies are policies from large underwriters.
And so, you guys, and it doesn't matter if it's a residential property or just a raw real estate or a commercial building like a skyscraper in Manhattan, the mm-hmm. Insurance has to happen, like, so you still have to do this, correct?
Yeah, so we insure, you know, so when we say real, we're talking about real estate and what types of properties, you know, would you buy title insurance? That would be any residential property, i.e. a single-family home in the suburbs. That would be a single-family condo unit. So we do a lot in Manhattan and Brooklyn, New York City, with condo buildings. Each condo apartment within a building is its own separate piece of real estate with its own tax lot and block number. It can be in a commercial office building. It can be vacant land. It can be a hotel. You know, all of this would be examples of real estate. People often ask about co-op apartments because in New York City there are a lot of co-ops. Co-op apartment is actually not real property. It's personal property because when you buy a co-op apartment, you're buying shares in a co-op cooperation, which entitle you to basically a lifetime lease to the apartment. So we do not, you know, we wouldn't insure a co-op apartment, but with co-op apartments, we often do what's called a lien search, which the bank, you know, requires just to make sure that there's no liens against that personal property. So, you know, we could also insure, as I said, properties all over the country. We've done portfolio, you know, so we've done, you know, the smallest personal mortgages of under $100,000 to about 2 years ago, we worked on the largest deal that we have ever worked on, which was about a 200 hotel portfolio. It was a $2 billion commercial loan against the 200-plus hotels across 19 states, I think it was, including, you know, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Florida, Tennessee. So that was a very complicated transaction, and, you know, to coordinate those type of things, those type of files, takes a lot of manpower and, you know, just a lot of paper, which now, fortunately, is all on the computer. So we don't have file cabinets. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I take pride in with respect to our company is that, you know, we've always, or as long as I've been a part of the company since 2013, we've been a paperless company. You know, we're green in that, you know, all of our files are electronic. We do not keep paper files. So in what can be a very paper-intensive business, again, use of the technology. Of course, with multiple backups, because, you know, everybody knows, you know, you try to, you know, things get erased from your computer. We're also handling a lot of sensitive information. Social Security numbers, we use encrypted email, as do most of the major banks. So if we're sending an email, you know, and it has somebody's Social Security number, that has a copy of the contract or an attachment with the contract of the property they're buying, sensitive financial information to safeguard this is a very important function that, you know, we take extremely seriously. And it's something when you're looking for, you know, a title company that you want to make sure that it's somebody that, fortunately now within the industry, there are certain, requirements that we have to meet in order to be compliant and with the transfer of sensitive financial information.
Okay, and so the second one I was going to address that you are speaking about, you have to have your own insurance, errors and omissions, or short E&O insurance. And I don't know if that's strictly for title searches, but so you do title insurance and you do the title searches. They're two separate things. So you provide two different services, correct?
Yes, yeah, that's a great point, actually. And actually, there's kind of a third service that we also provided. We're going to talk about it as much here in New York. But so, you know, to distinguish what Ted was bringing up, so we do the actual searches or coordinate the conducting of property searches in that, you know, we send people out to examine the title, the real estate records. Right now, as I was saying, a lot more of that stuff is online. So we utilize what are called title plants. Those are places where basically they've digitized all of those records. So some of that comes from there. In addition to getting records, tax records and stuff like that, that's title search work. Title insurance is actually the issuance of the title insurance policy, which, as I said, is an insurance policy, which you get when you buy real estate. That's second function that we perform or service that we provide. The third would be settlement related services. Now, we don't talk about it a lot in New York because in New York, most people do retain attorneys to represent them in real estate transactions. But outside of New York, if anybody here on the call or listening has ever bought property in Pennsylvania or in Florida, in those states, actually, you will, you know, a lot of times the real estate agents or realtors will write up a form contract. And then rather than somebody hiring an attorney, they will engage our services as a settlement agent. So we will hold the escrow deposits, actually similar to what attorneys do in New York. And when the property is purchased, we will receive the mortgage funds from the bank. We will actually be the one who does all of the financial adjustments at the end. And, you know, it's a pseudo legal type of job that we do. And again, not so much in New York, because in New York, lawyers do that job. But outside of New York, they rely upon settlement agents, which Worldwide Land Transfer is, you know, also a licensed and bonded settlement agent to do that type of work. And similar to what you're saying with E&O insurance, you know, we have to have a fidelity bond and different, you know, levels of protection for our clients who are using us for those services.
Right, right. And many people in your profession are attorneys like yourself.
Yeah, so I didn't get to talking that much about myself at the beginning, but I'm a native New Yorker. I grew up in Bayside, Queens, first Rego Park, then Bayside. So I'm a, you know, like to think I'm a New York City, I'd say kid, but now I'm a man. I'm a New York City native, and I went to Bayside High School, went to the University of Michigan for my undergraduate education, came back to New York, my home, and went to New York Law School and graduated from there, passed the bar examination, and I practiced law my first 6 years of my career, primarily as a litigator. So I'm also coming at this, actually, it's pretty funny because I generally head up our sales team, and that's my role in the company, but the only time I think they ever asked me a question really about a lot of the files is if, you know, we uncover what's called the list pendens, which is usually a notice filed against the property saying that there's a lawsuit that's pending against the property. So having, you know, 6 years experience, basically as a litigator, and I did a lot of real estate related litigation, foreclosure, short sales, which is another red flag area that Ted and I spoke about yesterday, that when you're dealing with title, there's a lot of issues that you have to look into. But I dealt with foreclosure. I dealt with disputes over real estate. So, it's something that I value the 6 years that I did have in practice, and seeing the fights over these issues. So that's oftentimes when they'll ask me a question about, something, that's involved in a property that's involved in litigation. So I did that for 6 years. I realized actually that I really love the billable hour. For those lawyers that are listening, having to record every 6 minutes of your time is a very tedious task and really can wear
really?
You down.
Every 6 minutes? Wow.
Yeah, because most lawyers bill in 6 minutes. In
increments,
in 6 minute increments. 0.1 is 6 minutes. Some bill 0.2 a quarter of an hour, but most are point in 6 minute increments. So to break up your probably 12-hour day into 6 minute increments is very tough. I didn't enjoy that. Especially trying to be creative, and if you step out for lunch and you can't really bill for lunch. You're not really working on any matters. Although some people will say if you go to lunch and you're with a colleague and you talk about a case, maybe you could bill a discussion about legal strategy. I practiced law for 6 years. Then I knew it wasn't a great fit. I didn't enjoy really the paper aspect of it, which is funny because I'm in a paper-related business, not physically anymore,
right,
but, a document-related business. I gravitated, actually became a residential real estate agent. I sold apartments in Manhattan at the Corcoran Group from 2001 to 2006. I started right after 9/11. And people were like, why would you go from being a lawyer to being a real estate agent? I said, if you ever went to a closing and you saw some of the checks that the real estate agents were getting, you might think the same thing. because certainly if you sell expensive properties, and listen, I'll tell you, it's not that easy to be a top real estate agent in the city. I have great respect for my real estate agent friends, not just in the city, anywhere. To be a real estate agent and successful at it is more than a full-time job. And I enjoyed the people aspect of being a real estate agent. I enjoyed helping people get through the process of buying a home. There can be no greater
right.
thing than to see somebody get the keys and this place be, anybody can buy real estate, but to make a house your home. And Lori, probably to work her into this, she's, I'm sure, gone out with lots of clients who've looked at, an empty home, and, then they engage her and say, how do you make this my home? How do you make this a place I love to be in? I love to come home to, and be at with my family or with my, or even by myself. That there's a certain, real passion play and emotional play to, you know, making you know, a house your home. And I enjoyed that a lot of it. And then I gravitated into title insurance in 2006 because it kind of combined a lot of the things that I liked about, you know, where my career had gone. I liked real estate. I'd always kind of worked in the real estate world, and I liked working with people. And it turned out the people I liked working a lot with, especially in New York, are attorneys. I liked actually working with attorneys more than I liked fighting with attorneys. And as a litigator,
that's funny.
It was very, you
Wait,
know, it was
a
very, well, I, you know, litigation is very adversarial, and I'm not an adversarial person. If you can get that gist, you know, through this webcast, I always like to say I'm a lover, not a fighter. So being a litigator was not a good match for me. And I found in title insurance, I can help a lot of the attorneys, you know, basically, you know, I can save them time in their day. I can, you know, save them time in some of the things they're doing for their clients, making some of these phone calls, resolving some of these issues, being a detective, as Ted mentioned. And, you know, and to me that, you know, it's been the perfect, you know, place for me as a, or I say this is my third career and three strikes you're out, so I got to stay here. But no, that's not the case. This has been, you know, the right place, you know, for me, and I'm very comfortable, you know, in this space, and you know, found a way to make it enjoyable and fun. But it's not so much the paper that I enjoy; it's more the dealing with the people, and you know, making, you know, calls and you know, resolving issues and troubleshooting and getting a deal. You know, from, and I found that when I was a real estate agent, that as much as I thought I wanted to get away from the adversarial nature of litigation, the part that I liked being a real estate agent was when somebody was ready to make an offer, you know, to get the other side to accept that offer, and then to, that's one thing, but then get it into contract, and then get that contract and get the parties to closing, and seeing those keys, you know, as I said, there's nothing better feeling for me than to see somebody who wants to sell a home and somebody who wants to buy a home. And that's actually one of the great things I think about being a real estate attorney, is that your clients, you know, if you do your job well, you know, you put two parties together, and you get people, you know, somebody wants to sell something to someone who wants to buy something. In litigation, all we did was we'd fight, and then we'd settle at probably the 23rd hour, and then they'd see our bill, and they would say, I can't believe I had to pay you this much. I could have resolved this at the beginning. So I'm not a huge fan of litigation, as you might get the gist. And it's funny, today we have a very large educational platform, and I give a lot of continuing legal ed classes for lawyers and continuing ed classes for real estate agents. And we had a class today for lawyers on mediation and alternative dispute resolution. And I said at the end of the class, I've always been a fan of parties trying to resolve their, you know, their differences and come to some sort of negotiated settlement early on rather than fighting. And that can be in any disputed transaction. And certainly, you know, having been divorced myself, unfortunately mine was amicable. I hate to see people fight and families get broken up and children get mad at one parent. So I guess as a life piece of advice, I would say take the time to find resolutions to your disputes. And life is hard enough with all the things we have to endure, that, try to find peace and make peace and make life easier for yourself rather than fighting. Although some people, I think, just like to fight.
that's the New York kid who likes that. And I heard you say you're no longer a New York kid. You're an adult now. You know what? Over here on the other side of the river, we still say Jersey boys and Jersey girls. Hell, they even made a play about us, right?
Yeah, that's right.
We're still Jersey boys. You can be a New York kid, New York City kids. It's okay. No one.
I'll still refer to myself as a New York City kid, a New York City public school system, actually. So I'm proud of that, because I feel like I got a really great, a good education. I won't say great education, but a good education, but a real good education for life. Because, you know, I went to a school that, you know, was very diverse and, you know, who was representative of the world that we live in. And, you know, I think that there's something to be said for, you know, exposure to a lot of different people, yeah, people early on in your life. You know, I think that helps you as you get out into the world and you encounter different people. And you know, the world's changing very fast before us.
Right.
And that keeps me interested, too. I have a great passion for working with young people. I've had a few different internship programs over the years. And, you know, I informally mentor a number of people who are 25 and under. I think they're the future. I happen to have a 20-year-old, actually, as well as three other stepchildren who are also all now, although the oldest one being 30. But, you know, young people are the future of this world. And I'm very impressed, actually, and I'm very hopeful for what I think the world has in front of it based upon the young people that I've seen. I mean, there's a belief that young people they don't listen. They're tied to their phones. But I've met a lot of highly motivated, highly smart, and highly socially conscious, you know, young people that I think the world, is going to be in good hands one day.
Really good. So let me ask you, aside from the brothers who don't speak and no one knows the license plate of the car, what's the craziest story or the most disastrous story you've encountered in your industry?
Well, the most disastrous stories, I would say, involve financial crime, I would say. And now, actually, there's a unit of the Department of Treasury called FinCEN, it's a Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. And they actually are requiring us to report a lot of information regarding real estate transactions. A lot of times real estate is purchased in an LLC or some sort of corporate entity. And what they were finding, actually, was that that a lot of criminals were using real estate as a means to launder money. They would buy expensive apartments in Manhattan, Miami, and that's where they would put this crime money. So the government started looking at those transactions and to see, and trace funds. And, that's been something interesting over the past couple of years that we've had to comply with. And then personally,
I've heard of Russians or people coming from China and opening up a suitcase with $500,000 in it, like $5 million in cash to buy a property in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cash transaction.
And
was
that
the first thing?
Was that kind of the catalyst? There was like too much cash being used to purchase real estate.
Yes, the first thing that they tried to flag FinCEN, this financial crimes network, was cash transactions, which, you know, oftentimes, you know, the proceeds of the money to buy these real estate was ill-gotten, and so that, you know, that's what they were looking for, were large, you know, cash-based transactions, because their feeling was that if, you know, somebody made money from something illegal, that money wasn't going to end up in a bank, because banks ask too many questions. Banks, you know, if you want to open a bank account, you got to show a driver's license, you got to show, you got to show information, and they got to know where you live. But if you want to buy real estate, you know, and you have $5 million, and you say it's going to be a cash purchase, nobody really cares where or certainly the buyer doesn't care where you're getting the cash from, as long as they're getting it,
right.
Or the seller doesn't care where you're getting the cash from if you're the buyer, as long as you have the money. So the first they were targeting, you know, high cash transactions. Then they, at first in New York and Miami. Now that's kind of spreading out, and, because criminals are smart, at least the good criminals are, the ones who don't get caught. they'll figure out, you know, they know what's, you know, where they're, you know, where the cops are looking, essentially. And, you know, so instead of going to New York, instead then they start buying expensive properties in Dallas or in, you know, Chicago. So, you know, now
for Kansas,
you know,
or Kansas or Wyoming, where no one's
looking. If there are expensive properties in Kansas or Wyoming,
right.
You know, it's a lot harder. You're not gonna. I don't think, you know, you're gonna find a $5 million. You may find a $5 million house, yeah, in Kansas, but it's gonna probably be. I'm not knocking Kansas by any means, but you know, just, you know, obviously valuation of real estate in the urban areas has always been, you know, higher. So. Yeah, your $5 million. You're
right,
gonna get
right.
A lot of money, a lot of bang for your buck on your $5 million Kansas house. I tell you that. Financial crimes is something very interesting. And then, unfortunately, we've seen, you know, some of our clients have been defrauded. We've had attorneys actually that email was hacked, and these criminals,
ooh,
you know, are very smart. They will start. They will look at a series of emails, and they will start to basically clone, you know, even the tone in the writing. And, you know, eventually if they know a real estate closing is coming, they will say, we've had two clients actually who got emails that looked like they were from their attorneys. They were not. They were from criminals and said, you know, here are the wire instructions for the closing upcoming. Please send it to,
wow,
this bank account. And there are millions, hundreds of millions of dollars that are stolen from wire fraud. So we have a lot of internal, you know, as do most title companies, you know, with double verification. You know, number one, you know, if somebody, you know, we never, you know, will send a wire without, you know, a double confirmation and from a number. Not, you know, they can give you a number, call this number to confirm, and you're calling, you know, China or, you know, or Russia,
right,
and they have somebody who picks up the phone and says, yes, this is Bank of America. You know, send your money here. You have to be extremely careful when you're wiring money. And if there's one thing I can tell, you know, people, if you get an email from your lawyer, which you think is a trusted source, pick up the phone, call the lawyer on the number that you know, not the number necessarily that's on the email, and say, listen, I need to verify, you know, that this, you know, these wire instructions are from you, and before,
right,
I send that money. Be extremely careful. I mean, again, these things were, wires were set up, you know, to make it easy so you don't have to go to a closing and get a certified check. And but with them comes, you know, again, the potential for fraud. So
Wow.
Give one thing to be safe is never just quickly run and wire money. Make sure you are sending it to where you think. And again, actually, in one particular instance, because Ted asked me, you know, something that we saw with this, money was wired, and we had to contact the FBI. And the FBI can kill a wire or retrieve a wire, I think, within 24 hours. But if you don't do it within 24 hours, and a lot of times they'll do it on Friday. Why will they do it on Friday? Because if you figure it out on Monday morning, it's too late. It's about more than 20. The wire kill that the FBI has is dead. And, you know, your money is usually, you know, wherever it got wired, we actually saw one where it got wired to Bank of America. Fortunately, not all of the money was transferred out of that account. So we were able to recover part of it, but the client lost a couple $100,000 and then had to close on the real estate transaction with, you know, without the money that it was now considered lost. So that's the other thing too. If you're in a contract to, you know, to buy real estate and, you know, you got defrauded, that doesn't necessarily get you out of the contract. So, you know, now you could be on the hook and get sued, you know, if you don't have the money. So you lost your $200,000 and now, you know, you get sued because you're in breach of contract. So there are some terrible stories that, you know, are just, you know, you could cry from some of these stories that I've heard, you know, about people being defrauded. And a lot of times it's not wealthy people that, you know, can, you know, just vessel up and over the blink of an eye, you know, another $500,000. It's somebody's life savings that's wiped out, never to be recovered.
Right.
And it's heart wrenching.
Wow,
that's invaluable, Mark. Absolutely invaluable. So We have like 6 minutes left. So before we close, and thank you so much for being our guest, how can people reach you?
Thank you for having me. I'm sorry, Laura.
How can people reach you?
Okay. So as I said, you know, Mark Lawrence with Worldwide Land Transfer. You can check out our website at www.worldwidelandtransfer.com, or you can email me, mlawrence@wwlandtransfer.com, or call me on my cell phone anytime, 917-204-5363. 917-204-5363. Happy to answer any questions too. I just want anyone who's listening, you know, you don't have to call me to engage my services. If you have questions or if you want recommendations, one of the things, you know, Lori and I met through networking, and I'm a big believer, and I spend a lot of my time in business networking and meeting other great professionals. So even if you, you're looking for a realtor in a particular area or a good, great mortgage banker, we've had the great opportunity to work with a lot of great professionals in the real estate space. I've had the opportunity to network with people, you know, in other professional services, having a great financial advisor, a great accountant. These are things that, you know, people, they don't teach you in college, you know, how to hire the right person to manage your money or how to hire the right accountant or keep your record. So I think it's really important, especially for young people, you know, to be hooked up with good business professionals that can guide them, you know, along the path and set them up for success in the future.
Right.
Don't
call you for a litigation attorney, right?
Right.
I got plenty of those too, but I may try to talk to you out of litigating and try to resolve it. Actually, as I said, we had a class this morning on mediation, and certainly I would advise that. Because, you know, as I said this morning, the only person that wins in a litigation are the lawyers. There's no winner or loser. Everybody's a loser except for the attorneys. and actually, that's an unfair statement because there are a lot of lawyers who do spend their time, you know, trying to advise their clients the right way. So unfortunately, there are some people that churn what we call churn cases and, you know, just create more issues, headaches, and paperwork and bill their clients, and that's not a recipe for a long-term successful career, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So, Mark,
and what
Matt,
most people
thank you.
Don't, yeah, thank you. What most
no,
people don't
ahead.
Know is you can request your own title person at your closing.
Yes, thank you for pointing that out, Lori. It was something actually I told my business partner to do a podcast, and he said, you got to make sure you mention that. So a lot of times in New York, they rely on their attorneys to select the title insurance person, and that's perfectly fine because oftentimes the attorney has a relationship and has worked and has a level of trust with the title insurance company. But you can, as the consumer, if you're buying real estate, you have the right to pick your own title company. So feel free to, if I said anything that resonates with you, or if you have a relationship with somebody in the title insurance business, you could say to your attorney, hey, listen, I know so-and-so, or I'd love for you to work with this person because I have a level of trust in them. I got to meet them. I think they're really good. And listen, the attorney should ask me questions. That's their job. Hey, listen, who do you write your policies through? What's your level of experience? But once, you know, I can show them that we are competent and a good company and we can, you know, get the job done and deal closed, then hopefully, you know, they'd be open to working with, you know, with the person that you want to work with.
Exactly.
Excellent.
So thank you so much, Mark. It's been great and very, very,
yeah,
very informative.
Thank you, Lori. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed, I guess I do this on a day-to-day basis and, you know, I don't get to talk about it, you know, that much. I live it. So hopefully, as I said, hopefully I didn't put anybody to sleep. And if I did, as I said to Lori, we could turn this into a 1-hour sleep meditation program. Hopefully that wasn't the case.
No.
Well, you made title insurance and title searches sexy again. Look at that.
I could leave with that last comment, actually. Thank you so much, Ted. Thank you, Lori. I appreciate you guys having me and exposing me to your audience. And as I said, anyone who has a question about it, real estate transactions, or anything real estate related or non-real estate related, please reach out and connect.
You got
Absolutely.
It. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Ted. It's been great. And thank you, Lori, so much for inviting me. It's been a lot of fun.
Yes. Great.
Right.
Have a great
evening.
Enjoy the rest of the snow.
Okay. Thank you.
Make a snowman. Take care.
That's
Take
right.
Care. Okay.
Bye. All right, everyone.
Bye.
We thank you for tuning in. We thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Have a great night.